Venerable Sirs, Excellency President Mahathunga, friends, we have to recommit ourselves, steel ourselves to the challenge that lies ahead. But before I say any more, thanks are in order. First and foremost, to my parents and to my family, for the values of public service and public interest that they have instilled in me. Next, very specially, to my senior colleagues and colleagues at the Center for Policy All Affairs. Babani, Mirak, Lionel, Asanga, Pradeep, Siani, Rahman, your support and solidarity has been a great strength in the years that have gone by, and indeed, I'm sure, in the years to come. Likewise, my thanks and appreciation for the support and solidarity given to me and to the Center for Policy All Affairs by the national and international human rights community. I know that at some point Sumila is going to say a few words. I remember in 1998, Sumila, when you won the prize in commemoration of 50 years of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, I gave the talk at the reception. In doing that, I did quote from Rosa Luxemburg, who said to her detractors, "You can have your revolution if I can't dance." And you very mischievously reminded me of the fate of Rosa Luxemburg. Well, Sumila, you're still standing, I'm still standing, and we'll continue to be standing. Friends, our country is at a crossroads, but it is also in crisis. We have won a war, but we are still stuck in a post-war situation. We need to move to what I say is a post-conflict situation, defined in terms of a situation in which the sources of conflict are not sustained and certainly not reproduced. The sources of conflict are not sustained and certainly not reproduced. But sadly, there are too many trends that suggest otherwise. At the present moment, economic development is being prioritized as the overarching goal of this country. But in this notion of economic development, sadly, unfortunately, there does not seem to be any room for rights. Rights are at best seen in this perspective as irrelevant, and at worst, they are seen as subversive. Public discourse has been forced into a dichotomy of patriots and traitors. Dissent is seen as treason. These at one level are not new. Neither are the problems with regard to transparency, with accountability. But what we see today, I submit to you, is something of a much larger scale. Much, much larger scale. And that issue happened after the trials and tribulations and travails that we have been through in the past is not just a cause to pause and ponder, but it should be indeed a sharp reminder that action is necessary, that things have to be done. Only the last couple of days, I was in Delhi at a conference which was addressed by one of others, the Nobel Peace Prize winner, Professor Amartya Sen. Sen reminded us that development without a firm base within a rights perspective and paradigm is inherently risky, inherently dangerous. He also made the point that fundamental to a functioning democracy must be the ability of all its citizens to discuss the public interest, the public good, and public policy. Today, we do not really have that, and that is indeed a tragedy. When we look at what is happening in this country, we really do need to remind ourselves that unless we as a society and we as citizens recommit ourselves to saving what is precious and valuable and worthwhile in this country, we have no right to talk in terms of failures, national interests, or public interests. We need to act. A culture of impunity is something that plagues us in all walks of life. It is still the case that Sri Lanka has the highest number of cases of enforced and involuntary disappearances, a record with working group in Sri Lanka. It is still the case that no action has been taken in respect of the 16 cases that came before the Commission of Inquiry. No action whatsoever. It is still the case that we have a Lessons Learned and Reconciliation Commission, which is hardly newsworthy. It barely gets a footnote in our daily papers. If reconciliation is to be a national process, a national exercise, a national need, the lament, the trauma, the travails of all of those poor women in Bamia, in Kirinoshi, in Jakarta, where they detailed what happened to them during the war, in the last days of the war. We should all know about that. We should all be reading about it. We should all be seeing and together with them engaging in this process of reconciliation, if it is to be truly national, and if they are really our lessons that ought to be learned. It is not enough for government officials and ministers and the great and good to grab the headlines on the Lessons Learned and Reconciliation Committee. They have spoken and no doubt will speak many times, but it is the lament, it is the pain and suffering of those women in particular, that the women in the rest of the country and the men in the rest of the country need to hear about, if we are to heal, if we are to move from the politics of hurt, of harm, and of hate that has seen the cancer eating away at our body politic and our civil society. We need to think and act upon it. We need to ask ourselves as to what has happened to a public service that was proud because it was professional. We need to ask ourselves as to what has happened to a foreign service that was proud because it was professional. We need to ask ourselves as to what happened to a time when the police were not universally thought of as the most corrupt institution in the country. We need to think of a time when we, as citizens of this country, can make the distinction and ensure that it prevails in practice between state and government. An election, after all, is not a license to unity. Those of us in civil society who have focused on human rights and on governance have done so in the firm, unrelenting